That has been a red flag to not just campaign finance experts, but also Republican donors who want to see their money spent on beating Joe Biden, not on getting him out of, you know, felony indictments.
Welcome to the Powers That Be Daily, Puck's podcast focused on the intersection of Wall Street, Washington, Silicon Valley, and Hollywood, and the players who run it all. I'm Peter Hamby. It's Friday, April 12th. Today, I'm joined by Teddy Schleifer to go deep on Donald Trump's fundraising machine, which is firing on all cylinders this spring as he tries to overcome his financial disadvantage against President Joe Biden. Teddy also explains why campaign cash is likely a big part of Donald Trump's search for a 2024 running mate. We'll discuss all that and much, much more on today's episode of The Powers That Be.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to The Powers That Be. I'm joined today by Teddy Schleifer to talk about the money chase in the presidential race, specifically Donald Trump having to play catch up to Joe Biden. The tables have turned. Joe Biden wasn't always a good fundraiser. Now he's the incumbent, raising a ton of cash. Donald Trump was a good fundraiser, starting late this year. Teddy, welcome to the show. Why is Donald Trump, as you write this week for Puck, playing catch up with Joe Biden? It feels like, you know, he had the nomination wrapped up in March. Why are they only starting the big dollar fundraising events like in recent weeks?
Yeah, so part of this is legal and part of this is attitudinal, I'll put it that way. The legal stuff is more boring, but, you know, Donald Trump was not officially the presumptive Republican nominee until Nikki Haley dropped out of the race, which was only weeks ago. And in the ensuing weeks, the Trump campaign has been able to raise major money. I believe the latest legal maximum is about $900,000 or $850,000 from donors, only because he is officially the nominee and you can raise larger checks when you can collect money for the RNC and for various state parties and various kind of other legal accounts. So now that he is officially the guy, he can raise money in larger and larger quantities, which Joe Biden has been able to do for years. And that's why I always found it a bit humorous when the Biden people would always try to compare their fundraising numbers to Trump's over the last year, because it very much was apples to oranges. And Joe Biden was able to raise bigger and bigger checks, and Trump was not.
That's the flip side of where we were in 2020 at this time. Trump campaign and the Trump White House were bragging about their money, and Joe Biden, not a great fundraiser, was only now just starting to ramp up his efforts.
Right. The attitudinal reason is that plenty of major donors didn't want Donald Trump to be the nominee. Shocker. But like reality died. Maybe it died much earlier than major donors realized it. Certainly well registered now after the collapse of No Labels and, you know, the delaying of the Trump legal cases and the realization that, you know, there will be no credible third party nominee through any other efforts. These are your two options, people. Or I want to talk about RFK at some point today as well. But like the Republican donor establishment is coming home, which is why Trump can raise more and more money. Is not just the fact that the legal maximum is bigger, but that Trump is starting from like a relatively low base. So many of the major Republican donors have not cut a single dollar or a single check to support him, and a lot of the Biden people have, right? You know, the Biden fundraising operation has had a full year of kind of general election fundraising they've been doing. Biden has a bundler operation that has been set up, you know, really back to 2021 or really 2019 when he ran the first time. Trump is getting started now. And the advantage of getting started late, as much as there is one, there's a lot of untapped resources that they can collect. So to raise $50 million, as Trump was able to do at this most recent fundraiser this past weekend, like, wow, that sounds a lot like a lot of money, but we don't know the breakdown, but you could raise that money in just 50, you know, $900,000 checks, right? So you can get 50 people to give that money, and no one, and so many of these people have given nothing. There's a lot of billionaires out there who are happy to give $900,000 to a person who's going to keep taxes low and, you know, do all the other Republican friendly business practices. And that is when you start out late and you have the legal maximum be as high as it is, achieving big numbers is actually kind of easy.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. The Biden campaign was obviously boasting about their New York fundraiser with Bill Clinton and Barack Obama and Stephen Colbert raising $25, $26 million, the biggest single fundraiser in political history, according to them. And then Trump turns around and raises, over the weekend, they say, $50 million. How does that check break down? If you're giving $900K to Trump's reelection efforts, where is the money going between which accounts?
That is a great question, particularly because of the controversy surrounding how much of the Trump money was being spent on his legal bills. So, you know, Peter, as we're talking right now, let's pull up the most recent fundraiser invite that someone forwarded me.
Your email
earlier
is
today.
Full of fundraising invitation forwards.
Sure, yes. Teddy@puck.news for anybody listening. The most recent one, Trump has a fundraiser in Charlotte, North Carolina on April 20th. And let's look at the contribution breakdown, because it is interesting. So the first $6,600, you know, Peter, when you make your next $1 million contribution to Trump 47, which is the high dollar fundraising committee, your first $6,600 will go toward the Trump campaign. So the primary and then the general election account. And of course, if you have a spouse, as you do, you know, feel free to throw your wife's bank account in there as well. But then the interesting thing is the next $5K goes to Save America, which is one of the Trump PACs that has been spending a lot of money on his legal bills. And that sort of has been a red flag to not just campaign finance experts, but also, you know, Republican donors who want to see their money spent on beating Joe Biden, not on getting him out of, you know, felony indictments. And then the rest of the money is in these kind of joint fundraising accounts, basically gets split up across lots of different RNC related accounts. You know, there's a recount fund, a building fund, a convention fund, and then every state party joins these things. So that's one of the kind of things that happened actually after Citizens United has been the ballooning of these kind of state party, Republican, and, you know, national party, like juggernauts that end up collecting more and more cash. A lot of that money doesn't actually end up going to spend, you know, like if you're making a contribution and it's being spent on the Alaska Republican Party, like that's not where you want the money to really go. But essentially, you can cut a pretty big check at this point, $850 or $900,000, and it can get spent by Trump and the RNC. So that's the idea there is that's much more proximate to the campaign itself than donating money to a super PAC run by some aide who worked for Trump 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Teddy, I want to take a quick break. I want to come back, ask you how Trump's search for a running mate, which presumably is coming down to the wire, how fundraising figures into that search. We'll be right back after this. Hey, Powers That Be listeners, I'm here to tell you that there's no reason to panic the next time you're searching for the perfect gift. Now you can use Gift Mode on Etsy. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting so you can find the perfect item for anyone and any occasion. It's easy. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about who you're shopping for and what they like. And Gift Mode instantly gives you a curated list of gift ideas based on hundreds of personas. I use Etsy all the time and have for years. I bought my brother some artwork. I bought my wife some jewelry. I even bought a rug for our living room on Etsy. I love it. But there's a lot of pressure around gifting. I usually have a hard time thinking of gift ideas for friends and family members around the holidays or birthdays in my life. And sometimes I get super stressed trying to find the perfect thing. But now with Gift Mode on Etsy, I can search hundreds of gifting personas and find so many incredible items. And I actually just found the perfect gift for a buddy who's just as into Cincinnati sports as I am, a Hot Cup of Joe Joe Burrow mug. That's right, I found that on Etsy. It's amazing. Now it's simple to find gifts made by independent sellers for all the people in your life. So whether you need a housewarming gift for the new homeowner or a birthday present for the pickleballer, Gift Mode has you covered. Need to find the perfect gift? Don't panic. Try Gift Mode on Etsy now.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to the Powers That Be, everybody. I'm talking to Teddy Schleifer about the 2024 presidential race and all the money Donald Trump is raising these days, this spring. Teddy, you wrote this week for Puck that Tim Scott is a front runner for the number two position on Trump's ticket. That's not a surprise. I think he makes a lot of sense, and he's been on the list for a long time. He appeals to evangelicals. He can drop Bible verses. He is the lone black Republican in the Senate. Presumably, Trump might be able to steal some black male voters out there in November. Importantly, too, Tim Scott is servile. He will do anything Donald Trump wants him to do or say. But you make the very astute point that by putting Tim Scott on the ticket, that could also bring some money into Trump's coffers. Can you explain?
Yeah, sure. A huge part of the Trump vice presidential decision, which is at its core about, you know, practicality, is what sort of assets these people bring to the table, right? And literally, assets that you bring to the table is the ability to bring money. And it's not just Tim Scott. Like, you know, Trump is considering everybody from Lee Stefanik to J.D. Vance to Christine Noem. And the word is out, not really that sheepishly, you know, pretty explicitly, but the word is out to allies of these people that if you have the opportunity to bring money to the table, that would be looked upon favorably. And it's not like a quid pro quo, right? It's not like, you know, there's no like leaderboard here where it's like, oh, well, Tim Scott has brought 15.6 million and J.D. Vance 15.59 and Scott gets the VP choice. I mean, it is a sign of strength, and it's a sign of, you know, of servility, I guess, to your point earlier, that, you know, you can be a hearty, you know, Sancho Panza here and bring the money that, you know, the number one wants to see. So for Tim Scott, you know, he has a very, 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 very complicated relationship with major donors, and one major donor in particular, and that's Larry Ellison, who is the founder of Oracle and one of the richest people in the world, who really likes Tim Scott, so much so that he promised to give him, you know, tens of millions of dollars to fund his presidential campaign, but doesn't like Tim Scott enough to actually do it. And it was a huge source of trepidation and conniption and trauma, frankly, among Scott allies, that much of 2023 was spent being tortured by this, you know, Hawaii-dwelling 80-year-old billionaire who basically never delivered the money that he promised he would. And Tim Scott, this time around, seems to think that he might have a chance to kind of use that shit to get the vice presidency. But, you know, all Donald Trump needs to do is read any coverage of Puck, and he'll realize that, you know, the Tim Scott relationship with Larry Ellison is, as I said, very, very, very complicated. And, you know, I don't know if Scott can necessarily really deliver that, frankly, partially because Scott is genuinely sees Larry Ellison as a friend, maybe overly overly docile or you know, I don't know if Larry Ellison really sees Tim Scott as a quote unquote friend, but Tim does. And, you know, to be a good politician, you got to be willing to extract money from your friends. And I don't know if Tim Scott has that in him.
This gets to something else, Teddy, I've been meaning to ask you since the beginning of this episode. You mentioned those major donors who might be reluctant to give to Trump, or during the primaries, they were reluctant to give to Trump, and now they're coming around. I remember you had some reporting a couple months ago about how Trump's fundraising team sent out warning to donors that it's time to get on board. If not, you are out, you're cut out, you can't come to the parties, you can't come to Mar-a-Lago. How has...
Oh, no. Can't come to the parties.
That's a... I mean, let's be honest. That's what donors want.
No,
they
no.
Wanna
I'm
want to be in the room.
Sure.
Is it actually playing out that way? Are people who gave money to Ron DeSantis or Nikki Haley or, you know, Americans for Prosperity, or people who talk shit about Donald Trump during the primaries, are they coming crawling back? Are they cutting checks? Or, as you said, is it still hard to get a lot of those quote-unquote mainline establishment donors to come around?
No, I think the it's not the ultimatum was a farce. At the end of the day, I mean, if you look at the invite for the Trump event this past weekend in Palm Beach, you know, it's like full of people who supported other candidates during the primary. You know, Robert Bigelow, who was sort of the largest DeSantis donor, who put in $20 million, like, you know, he's involved, or he was on the event invite. You know, the Ricketts family, which was not spending money for Trump during the primary, at least, you know, they're there. You know, Warren Stevens, who is sort of a well-known finance executive in Arkansas, one of the richest kind of people in the state and one of the largest Republican donors involved with the American Opportunity Alliance, which is a kind of high-powered Wall Street-friendly network. Like, Warren Stevens was spending money on Nikki Haley like pretty late into the primary. I want to say like even into like late February, maybe even March. Like he's was one of the hosts on this event. So like at the end of the day, like to end where we began, I mean, there's like this desperation in Trump world where they're going to be outspent. They know they're going to be outspent, but like at the end of the day, the door's wide open for that $844,000 check. So I do not believe that. While I do not judge the Trump people for trying to make it seem like there was, you know, a deadline, and like I think the date people get involved does matter. If you want to be named an ambassador, or you want to be like on the Trump fundraising committee, like a chair or a co-chair of that operation, you know, you have to be a loyalist. But at the end of the day, they'll take the money until the day before election day. So good news to those who supported Asa Hutchinson 6 months ago.
Asa's inner circle donors, there's still time to become ambassador to Swaziland. Teddy, thanks so much for joining me, buddy. Have a good weekend.
You bet.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of The Powers That Be. As a reminder, The Powers That Be is the official podcast of Puck. We'd like to thank Ben Landy, Liz Goff, and Alex Bigler for their editorial and production guidance. If you like what you hear, please share with a friend. It really helps us keep delivering the inside scoop that only Puck can offer. Follow us on Twitter at Puck News. I'm Ben Landy. See you tomorrow. This has been a presentation of Odyssey. Please listen, rate, review, and follow all episodes wherever you get your podcasts. The Powers That Be Daily is executive produced by John Kelly, co-founder of Puck, Bob Tabador, and Ben Landy, executive editor at Puck.